jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2018. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be here with you.
It certainly is. We've got a couple of weeks of JLT under our belts right now, and even though I wish there was a bit more footy on the weekends, I am enjoying having something to watch on the weekdays, Mark. Have you gotten to watch much JLT so far?
Yeah, I've been watching a bit, mate. It's still, to be honest, it's not all that interesting when it's not super competitive, and just really watching out for the rookies more than anything.
Some footy's better than none in my eyes, so I'll take what I can get. And it gives us a little pointer to Supercoach, so it's always good as well. Before we jump into this week's show, and we'll be covering the forward line this week, just want to mention again our Patreon page. So patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you have from $1 a week that you'd like to put toward the show and support our run costs to make the show more sustainable. Very, very much appreciate the new supporters that have come through in the last couple of weeks. There's been quite a few of you, so very, very much appreciated. Like to continue building the momentum during the preseason because that tends to be when we get the most of our support. So I know we mention it each week, but it is a massive thanks. We couldn't do it without our Patreons, and we will be releasing additional content for you this preseason, including a team reveal. So try and see what else we can wrangle up in that time. Don't forget, for our Supercoach Coach leagues, the registration for our ranked leagues is open. If you have registered for one of our ranked leagues, don't forget to keep a slot for us. It takes a little bit of time because I've got to wait for everyone to come through and then send out the league invites one league at a time. Normally only give 24 to 48 hours before I kick off the next league. So I tend to send out 20 invites to an 18-person league. So it's first in best dressed, and then the extra two get bumped down to the next invite. So we do that to try and give people as long as possible to register for our ranked leagues. But then after that, we'll need you to be on the ball and joining our league. So keep a spot for that. And of course, our Supercoach Coach group, don't forget to join that. We give shout outs to the top scorers across the year in the Supercoach Coach podcast. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is the episode where we're going to go through the forwards. Putting the run sheet together, Mark, it was a bit of a headache. There's a few options right at the top of the tree, and then it gets quite sparse quite quickly. A lot of options that show promise. Either they're sort of older players that are now moved into the forward line in the twilight of their career, or they've been affected by injury and they might sort of get back to that scoring, or they're a young player who potentially might break out. Attractive options, Mark, but in terms of rolled gold premium options, it's definitely sparse.
I reckon it's all right, though. Everyone's in the same boat, and we have to be a little bit creative, and you can try and maybe pick a breakout or two. I think that there's plenty of fun to be had in the forward line. I know some people see it as a pain in the butt that we don't have the really obvious high-scoring selections, but I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. It's probably the most open season of Supercoach or preseason of Supercoach that I've seen in a while. So it's nerve-wracking having to filter through sort of subpar options potentially, but I'm excited for what that'll mean in terms of rankings and different teams and stuff like that. Yeah. So before we get into the show, just mention that next week will be the backline show, and then we'll have one final show before the season kicks off where we'll be covering the rookies and doing a recap of the JLT series. So we won't be covering the rookies in the forward line. Do note that that is of more relevance for this particular position because
structures.
That's right. As we get into structures, we'll probably talk about running a fairly deep rookie forward line if we can.
I'm ready for lockout, mate. This is the first time in the preseason where I've got my team and I thought, yeah, I think I nailed it. I think I'm good. But bad part about that is that over the next 2 weeks, I'm sure I'm going to change it and make some mistakes.
I'm sure by the time we get through this show, Mark, hopefully it'll toss up a few additional considerations. It normally does for me anyway. Just spending an hour talking through the different positions tends to throw up even more ideas. All right, let's get into some questions, Mark. Dylan James Murray's question is, first up, how to mitigate the effing shambles that the forward line is this season? We got quite a few questions about just what to do. Another comment asking us to pick their forward line for them. It is a bit of a struggle, which you've already alluded to. Beyond having the opportunity to be a bit more creative, do you have general advice about your approach for the forward line this year?
Yeah, look, I think what hopefully listeners can take out of today's show is that there's only really two structures that I can see working in the forward line. Maybe you could stretch that out to three, but hopefully we can narrow down some of those selections. So you might be looking at, there's 20 players you could pick now. If we can narrow that down to sort of 8 or 10 premiums that you could pick and just pick from that group. And I think people will hopefully walk out of this with a bit more confident in some of those selections and taking a punt on some players too. So it's maybe not a bad way to preface the show, which is I think that I'm looking at 4 premiums, with premiums being anyone over 400,000. So that maybe is like a fair bit of value in some of those premiums that we're going to look at. And then Christensen, and then 3 rookies. Now, I'm willing to be flexible that I might actually need to have a 5 premium Christensen forward line with 2 rookies on the bench, depending on what shows up. But I think that, I guess the third option that I was maybe referring to earlier is that you go 4 premiums, 2 mid prices, and then rookies on the bench. I just can't see you having more than 1 rookie forward on the ground this year. I think that Christensen is a godsend, and I think that there may be maybe 1 or so other mid-prices that you could pick in that position. So I think that starting with that approach simplifies things a little bit.
As you alluded to already, if you're starting with a 4, potentially even 5 premium forward line, you're looking more to fill those slots with value premiums rather than the absolute top-end premiums, I'm guessing.
There's not really top-end premiums to pick from. Like, I think there's only 6 or so people over 500,000. There's no like high 500,000 players to even pick from. So there's sort of value even in the top end premiums. But yeah, I am saying that you probably need at least 2, maybe 3 of those premiums, depending on how many you pick, to be less than 450,000.
I'm guessing, in other words, you're not picking Menegola, Heaney, Franklin, and Green, who are the top priced options and
no.
Probably most likely to stay in the top 6.
Yeah, and well, there's some reasons why I'm not picking those guys.
Let's get into the actual players that will determine what strategy we go with. The first question here is from Dave, or at El Dante Hicks. Menegola looks to be a dead set pick for Dave, given he's a prolific ball winner and a strong tackler. Probably plays the most midfield time out of all the mid-forward types available in the forward line. Would you agree with that?
I think that you've sort of touched on this in the podcast previously, and I think that I have to defer to you on Menegola.
I think what you're referring to there, Mark, is talking about the impact of Ablett and what that will mean for Menegola and Duncan, who I said would probably be most impacted by the arrival of a player like that. I've got concerns about his ability to stay in a high-scoring role. I don't doubt his ability to rack up the ball or even take marks in the forward 50, considering the amount of games he's played. An exceptional forward target as a midfielder, and especially for his height as well. So all his attributes shouldn't really go away. His ability to rack up the ball, that shouldn't go away. And when you look at his average, you know, he played 6 games, averaging 99 in 2016, and then 19 games last year, averaging 100. Like, I can understand when you look at those stats going, he's a dead set gun, but if he all of a sudden gets put into a more compromised position where he starts playing, you know, 70% of time in the forward line, or they move him off the ball and into the wing, and he might get less opportunity to touch the ball because now, you know, Ablett's in there. I just think there's a little bit of doubt on Menegola, and he costs a lot of money. So whether or not you want to pay for that risk is questionable. But I certainly don't think he's a terrible pick, Mark.
Yeah, I think that, well, you got Selwood, Ablett, Danger, Duncan, clearly ahead of him. If those 4 play most games and average over 100, it's going to be very difficult for Menegola to average more than 90, you would think. Just because to get 5 guys averaging pretty high is very, very difficult in a team, and especially if they're all midfielders. So, and then, I mean, you can add Scooter Selwood to that in taking some of that midfield time. I think that Menegola would be relying on some of those players to get injured. And look, I mean, Scooter and Ablett do have pretty high durability concerns. So he may get that game time. He may get that midfield time in order to score the points. But I think he's relying on other players not getting so much midfield time or not being fit in order to score really, really well. And I don't see him providing value at 100 average or 550,000. I don't see him really pushing that average up to 110.
He could still average 95 for the season and be in the top 6 by season's end. I think it's probably more based on his starting price tag, Mark, that we're more hesitant on that selection. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
So we'll move on to the next question here. This one's from Matt Grimson. He's asking about Heaney and whether or not he's a good pick given his tough draw to start the season and having had an interrupted preseason. Was he your first locked, Mark, in the first show back? Is that still the case?
He was my first locked in the first show back, and I am concerned about his preseason, and it's possible that his price may fluctuate down a little bit. And I think in my head I had him averaging more than 97 last year. Like, he just felt like he scored a little bit better than that. I think that he's the one player in my forward line that is over 500,000 that just has not moved out of it. Look, he may not work out. There are some risks there, particularly around fitness. Fourth season, just absolute gun. He's the one guy in that forward line that has the potential to average 110, 115 if everything went right. So I want to be on that train if it happens, and I don't see him having a hugely big drop-off, so...
I think when you compare Heaney to Menegola, it makes it quite difficult to pick Menegola because, yes, Menegola averaged 3 points more last year, but that aside, that means he's more expensive this year than Heaney. Menegola's potentially going to get less opportunities around the ball. Heaney, you'd think, is only going to get more. Last year, he paid 65% game time. Heaney could eventually move to being 85% in the midfield if they wanted to. Heaney's more talented than Menegola, as much as it pains me to say. Like, he's a higher selection. He's shown more impressive athletic traits, and he's arguably got easily more upside. So, given the choice between Heaney and Menegola, if Menegola was a selection that you're passing on because he potentially might be slightly overpriced but still be a top six forward, then in comparison, Heaney seems like a bloke that's pretty hard to pass up. He'd probably be one of the easier selections that we're going to talk about today, and he's still not an absolute lock given his preseason so far, but it's crazy that even given that, he's probably still the easiest selection that we get to make, and that's probably shown by the fact that, Mark, you said he's your first pick player in the forward line for 2018, so I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, I think that if I had a chance to change my mind, I'd probably go with Bundy now as my first picked player in the forward line. But Heaney being my in the top three picked premiums, or top two, the upside's just there. I can understand that he may not work out. I can understand. I'm not going to like say he's an absolute lock that everybody should pick, but I do feel like he's a pretty easy selection for my team.
It's hard to see him going down to an average of 90. At worst, I think you'd see him treading water, but Menegola could potentially go backwards. So should be a top six player by the end of the season, even if he doesn't necessarily improve on his current price tag, I would have thought. All right, Kane Arnold's question is next. He's wanting us to compare Heaney against his forward line counterpart in Lance Franklin, the best key position forward in the game. Hasn't reached the heights of, you know, the 115 plus when we used to consider him an absolute must-have. But considering that the options are rather scant this year, this is a bloke that has averaged 95 two seasons in a row. Doesn't look like he's dropping off yet, despite being over 31 years of age. You'd think Sydney would still give him plenty of opportunities to kick bags of goals. I tend to like to pick Franklin up cheaper, but it's hard to see him being a bad selection given the struggles we're having looking for viable selections this year.
Yeah, he seems to be almost like some guaranteed points, I guess. The one amazing thing about the last 2 years is that he's played 22 games two seasons in a row. Like, if you had said that to someone 2 years ago, they just would have thought that was completely unbelievable and impossible, because he's just known for missing a game or two here and there. So the new buddy seems super reliable. I think that there is some upside on his 98 average. Sydney had a pretty poor season last year, and if they started the year a little bit better, he may be able to get some more points, but then there is a fair bit of competition for points at Sydney, so it is hard to sort of get right up there. I don't think he's got a huge amount of upside. So from that perspective, I mean, he could just burst out into the season and just go completely nuts, but he's probably close to fully priced. Not a whole lot of value there, but seems a solid, reliable pick. But with that said, I mean, he could start off the season really poorly. He has in the past had really, really poor games in him. But I think that between Heaney and Buddy, I probably wouldn't be picking both, because you don't want too many players from the one team on the one line, especially. I'd rather just gamble on one of those guys. And for me, it's Heaney. But it's hard to argue against picking Franklin this year as well.
Yeah, Franklin would have to be in top three, top four forward line options this year. Whether or not he's ahead of Heaney is almost a flip of the coin at this stage. I think you take the younger mid forward over the older key position player, and by that measure, Heaney beats him out. But if you look at the individual, Heaney's had an interrupted preseason. Franklin looks like he's bang on. His first JLT back was absolutely scintillating. Yeah. So
it was against the Lions, so don't get too carried away. But I think that you're right. It's pretty close to a flip of the coin between those two guys. And I don't think that either of us can make a really, really strong, convincing argument to take Heaney over Franklin, but just the upside seems that little bit higher, the youth, the potential to midfield time. Just there's a few reasons why I guess us two in particular are taking the gamble of Heaney over Franklin.
Toby Green is the next player to talk about. Adam Pianto has asked about him via our Facebook page. Would you risk him given he gets suspended all the time? And that is absolutely the best call out for the Toby Green selection. He would have been a fantastic selection last year if not for the fact that he basically missed more than four games, was it?
Yeah.
It's just frustrating. Really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I think that the tricky part with Toby Green is that he hurt his toe or broke his toe over the summer and he hasn't completely healed from that. So with Toby, I think that you do have to be careful about him carrying an eagle like that. He does seem like you'd be able to pick him up at a reasonable price at some point. I guess the problem with Toby is that he had like an insanely good season last year and averaged 96. Without extra midfield time, I'm not sure that he can go a lot above 96. And if he was given the midfield time, I'm sure that he could average 120. He is an absolute gun. But I'm not sure that GWS would give him the midfield time because they need him up forward. And he's so good in that forward position. And they've got so many midfielders. So I'm not sure whether his ceiling's capped at around that 96. It wouldn't surprise me to see him average up to 105, though, and just prove all the doubters wrong and play 22. And he is someone that I'd really like to have in my team at some stage. If it wasn't for the preseason doubts, he'd probably be in there. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, look, I think I've picked Green the last 2 years. I've been massive, massive advocate for Green. And I can definitely see him averaging 105, 110. But the problem with Green isn't so much that he's even had a poor preseason. I think poor preseason aside, like, this bloke is an absolute bull at the gates. I don't doubt his ability to start the season off strong regardless. But it's more the fact that it's not just last year he had a great season. It was the year before as well. He's All-Australian in that position. Nobody plays that position better than he does. He gets the most ground ball gets. He's so dangerous on both sides of his body in terms of converting goals. He's good overhead for his size. You could not play that position better. And he's not broken the 100 mark playing that position. And if he can't do it, who else can? Unless he's going to get more time playing in the midfield, unless they tweak his role slightly, tweak the mix that he plays in the forward line, I don't see that changing. And he's just so good at what he does. I can't see them pulling him out of that role when they've got, you know, a glut in the midfield already with Whitfield and Scully and Kelly and Shield.
And because he's so good, they're going to send someone to him every single week.
So a lot of love for Green, but it sounds like we're both sort of skeptical, especially considering the chance that he might miss games and the limited preseason. But I don't think either of us would begrudge anyone that starts with Toby Green. So having said that, let's move to the next tier, Mark, and to the fifth highest averager from last year. And we're moving to another key position player, Coleman medalist for multiple years. So Josh Kennedy, averaging 94, one of the most impactful forwards in the game. Last year was affected a little bit by injury, but in terms of absolute ceiling, Josh Kennedy has the potential to kick 10 goals and score 180 points. Having said that, I would assume that you'd much prefer picking Josh Kennedy in a Supercoach year where the Eagles are more likely to finish in the top eight than not. And they've actually done really well in those regards for the last couple of seasons. But this season, there's the decent chance that the West Coast will drop off a bit with the amount of retirees they had last year. That's my major concern on Kennedy. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think he's not someone that I've considered at all. That doesn't mean that he won't average really well, but he's over 30 now. He's in a team that should be maybe dropping down the ladder a little bit. And he's what you would have to assume is fully priced based on his long-term career average. So he's never averaged over 97, won the Coleman a few times like Cal. How much better can he possibly play? And how much more can he possibly score? He's an absolute gun, but at his price, not someone that I'm considering at all.
I also like picking up Kennedy when he's had a couple of quiet games and he's at the 400k mark and you pick him up just before hopefully he goes on a bag of kicking eight goals. And that's where the key position forwards are fun to play, when you get to pick them up at their lows due to the fact that their standard deviation in scoring is higher, that they fluctuate a bit in price. You pick them up at the low, get their scoring when they come back up for a big bag of goals. So probably not as good a starting selection. Chad Wingard though, another mid forward that has transitioned more into the midfield last year, 511,000, average 93. We've seen him average close to 100 as he was playing as a forward. So you'd think, given that, given the the fact that Port Adelaide are on the rise, he's probably one of the top contending forward selections as well.
I know that we've both picked him in the past. I know you've had probably more success with him in the last couple of years than myself. I think that Port should probably have a pretty good season. They've got a relatively easy draw. They've brought in a bunch of new players. Will Wingard continue to have that midfield role? He was sort of swapped with Gray, but is Rockliffe going to sort of negate the need for that this season? And maybe he's more dangerous up forward and he could average 98 as a forward. I was really impressed by his consistency last year. Turned into a really good pick. So, look, I think that he's not someone that's on my radar at all, but maybe he should be based on all those factors that I mentioned, particularly Port's draw.
I just wish he either had the body type or the agility, or maybe it's just physical maturity to stand up in tackles a little bit better. Because when you look at his attributes, being able to fly for marks, meters gained is huge. I think he was registered one game where he had 1,000 meters gained last year, which is incredible. In terms of his ability to actually find the ball as a small player, is pretty impressive. He reminds me of, you know, a Robbie Gray, a Dusty Martin, Gary Ablett. They play in that similar mold, except he doesn't quite stand up in tackles very well, and that's a part of the game that's missing, especially when you play in the midfield. He seems to get smashed by tackles quite heavily. But I'm actually pretty excited about that pick. Whether or not I take the punt on him to start the season is another equation. As Mark mentioned, I've picked him up in the last few years. I tend to have the best success with Wingard when he's priced around the 400k mark. I tend to have quiet patches here or there. So as a starting selection, I'd be a little bit wary, but certainly an option to consider. He might actually end up in the top six forwards by the end of the year.
Quite a good chance of that.
All right, next question here is from David Swizz. He's asking about Jack Billings. He's had a lot of hype since joining St. Kilda as a kid. He's starting as the seventh highest averaging forward for the year. So, you know, not very far off that top six forward already. He's always shown a pretty decent upward trajectory. His talent's good. His attitude to the ball's good. He tackles hard. St. Kilda, I suppose, if they were a top eight team, you'd have a bit more confidence in Billings. They've had, you know, Montagna and Riewoldt retire. What will that mean for St. Kilda? And have you considered him at all, Mark? Have you picked Billings before?
I picked him in his rookie year. Had a bit of success with him then. Pretty handy. So, and I've been watching him a little bit and been a bit of a fan of him since then. And he is in my side at the moment, mate. I think that out of the two guys over 500 that I think I'm happy to pick, I think picking for upside here, bit of a gamble. The Saints have an improving list. I know that they've lost a couple of players, but they do have an improving list, and I think that they can cover Riewoldt and Montagna. I guess that the real tricky part is, as the question mentions, that they do have a pretty tough draw this year, but played 22, averaged 92 last year. Don't really see him going backwards, so I think that, yeah, he's a player very high in consideration for my team.
How much time has he spent in your team, Mark? Have we just caught him as he's swung in, or has he spent most of the time?
So probably wasn't there from the start, but the last couple of weeks he has been. And I know that he's been out with a hamstring injury, but the news out of the club was that it was a pretty small hamstring injury. It was more tightness, and that we're just being super precautious by keeping him out. Given his upside and his age, and the fact that he played 22 last year, I'm happy to sort of still gamble, even with a little bit of doubts over the preseason. If there was no preseason doubts, I would be locking him in 100%.
Turning 23 in his fifth year in the AFL, it is about breakout time. Averaged 92 in his fourth year. Signs are definitely pointing up. I can see why the hype on him is real. So another interesting selection there. The problem with a lot of the blokes that we talked about, you know, Wingard and Green, is their ability to, or your confidence in their ability to average, you know, high 90s, close to 100 for the season. Even though they all show potential, I'm not sure what percent I'd give to each of them in terms of actually being able to meet it.
Yeah, but this is the fun part. We get to
maybe that's a good question. Pun. Oh, absolutely. So I guess this is a good question to you though, Mark. What likelihood would you give of Billings averaging 100 this year, going from 93 to 100?
So that's a really good question, and this is how I think that the listeners should all be thinking about super coaches with probabilistic thinking. Actually put percentages on the chances that you think people are of achieving what you need them to achieve, and whether you're getting value at that price in order to make that investment. I think it's really important to think like that.
That's a poker play in you coming out, Mark.
You're right. It is the poker play coming out, but it's not necessarily that. I think it's more than that. I think that probabilistic thinking is something an approach that you should be taking to life, not just games like these.
Absolutely. It's not a binary thing. It's not Billings is either going to be a definite yes or a definite no. There's a chance that he'll make it and a chance that he won't. So I agree with that, Mark. Sorry, I cut you off. Go for it.
I haven't put a chance on him making an average of 100 because I don't think that he needs to. Like, I think that if he can get to a 95 plus average, then I'd be okay with that. It's just that can he average 100 plus, 105, become a really, really good selection? Even if that's only 20% chance, if it's higher than the other possibilities that I see out there, like even Toby Green and Wingard, because I think that they might get stuck in the forward line a bit more and have a bit of a cap on their ceiling, then maybe that's still a gamble worth taking if I think that the chance of him averaging 95 is about the same as Green and Wingard. So comparing him to those two other guys is a good way to go about it. I can see why other people would make a different selection in this situation. But yeah, look, I think that it might only be 15 to 20% chance of averaging over 100, but I think the chances of him going backwards would be less than 15%.
And the chance of him doing 95
plus? Yeah, that's in the middle.
50%. 85. That's why I wanted to ask the question. That shows you how close the margins are. You believe that Billings is only a 15, 20% to average 100 and really be a season-defining player. You know, if he gets a 7-point improvement and he becomes, you know, one of the top three averaging forwards, that would make him fairly season-defining. He has a 15% chance of potentially moving back, but above 50%, you know, at least better than a coin flip of improving and averaging at least that 95 mark. And by those measures, he's currently sitting in your team. I think if you looked at Wingard, if you looked at Green, if you looked at Heaney, if you looked at Franklin, it's so close. And you're really coming down to perception and your ability to crystal ball the future here. Having said that, I think there are more things going in Billings' favor than potentially some of the other selections that we've talked about. The only sort of concern that I really see for Billings is just the team that he plays for, and the pressure that he might be under and the opportunities he might get as a forward line player, but that's about it.
Yeah, but and there are all reasons. I think the best. There are all reasons to pick Wingard as an alternative, like playing in a team that's on the rise, playing in a team where you know he's going to get opportunities, has plenty of skill, and they have an easy draw.
Mm. And I think that's why we're both excited in terms of seeing what the mix of players will be come lockout, because the options are more open this year. You know, in the midfield, we're having this conversation, and the forward line is certainly the case. So, all right, we'll move on to the next bloke, Robbie Gray. He was my first lock in the first show back. 504,000, averaged 92 last year. Do have to call out that, you know, he had a stint with getting over testicular cancer over the off season, so that definitely would have affected him. Robbie Gray could average the most out of all the players that we've talked about so far. And by that metric, he is still very, very high up in my rankings.
Okay, and I think if you think about the probabilistic sort of stuff, that he has the potential to go 110 plus, but I would rate that as a less than 5% chance, especially with his change of role, the issues that he's had over summer, and his overall durability problems in the past. He had 4 or 5 scores under 50 last year. He did have a couple of big ones, an early 160, a couple of scores over 130. He's not a player that's been in consideration for my team at all, and I've made mistakes on Gray in the past. I picked him early when I thought that he was going to be good, and he let me down a bunch of times, and then I didn't get on him when he was amazing. So, look, you're right that his upside is...
He played 22 last year,
Mark. He did, and that's very, very rare for Robbie Gray, and I do not believe that he can back that up. Maybe people should defer to your opinion here, but not in consideration for me at all.
All right, next question's from Jib Rangers. Thoughts on Lukey Dalhouse? Got pushed more into the forward 50 last year with McLean getting more midfield time. Is he still a reliable option? And he also wants to ask about McLean while we're at it as well. Dalhouse has previously averaged 105. Like, last year was quite a significant drop-off for him. I wonder whether it's a one-season blip or if it's something that's going to continue. Has he been in your team much?
I think it's probably, I don't know, it's him versus Billings in a way for me. It's really interesting. So last year, he started off really, really, really well. Was being an awesome pick until about round 8 or so. And then the Doggies dropped off. And once they realized they couldn't make the finals, I think that they experimented a fair bit with the structure of their team. And Dalhouse probably did spend more time in the forward 50, whereas in the JLT, from what I read, he was spending more time in the midfield, even though he didn't score that well. So I'm finding him very, very hard to read. I think he really does have that really, really big upside. There's also a good chance that we don't see him average over 95 again. So he's a bit of an enigma to me, and I don't really have a clear view on him. That's why he's not in my team at the moment, because I'm just not solid one way or the other. So the level of doubt is leading me to maybe not pick him. Do you have any better thoughts on that?
The problem is they have so many blokes who play in that mold. Just look at the number of mid-forward Bulldogs options that you can pick in Supercoach 2. Like Mitch Wallace, Lukey Dalhouse, Toby McLean, Caleb Daniel. They've got so many short blokes that can make good decisions in the midfield, rack up the ball and go forward and be a threat for their size. But like, how many of those blokes can you play until they start cannibalizing points from each other? And that's, I think we're both feeling that that might be happening with Luke. Having said that, he's shown the most upside and the consistency in being able to be that premium player for years. I think he might almost seem like a really obvious selection in hindsight. It's hard to see him going backwards from here. Like, you would assume there's a fairly decent chance that he still ends up averaging 95. Like, I'd give him at least a better than a coin flip chance of going back to 95. Maybe not 105, but 95. If he goes from 91 to 95... still be a win.
I guess there is a counter argument to that, and that is that he scored over 100 five times in the first seven rounds last year, and then only went above 100 three times in the next 15. So, like, you could argue that that second half of the season form would continue and that he'd average significantly less than 90. But I think that all the points that you raise are really good, and I think that you're 100% right that at times this season I felt like he's a really super obvious pick, and he may in hindsight turn out to be that. But he may turn out to be a bit of a meh pick because of all the other options that the Bulldogs have in the midfield. And look, if they're resurgent this year, he's only 26. He could still do a lot of damage. On to Toby McLean. I think that he scored really well once he moved into the middle. He probably was given more opportunities in the second half of last season. I really, really like him as a player. I really love what he can do. I think that all the reasons that you mentioned around the people cannibalizing each other's points and having a lot of players of the same type apply to McLean, and I think that out of the two, I'd be picking Delhouse.
Yeah, it's no-brainer. McLean averaged 85 in his third season. Dalhouse has averaged 105 previously, and 91 would be considered a low for him. So if the price difference is 6 points in average, I think it'd be fairly risky picking McLean ahead of Dalhouse. All right, we're going to move on to the next rank of players. I'm going to try and fire this off more rapid fire because they've got a fair few more concerns about them as we move through the next list of players now. So first bloke, David Mundy, mid forward, 491,000. Previously a 110 plus midfielder, but now at the twilight of his career moved forward, averaged 89 last year. There is a chance that he might still average 100 because even though he spent more time in the forward line, he still played midfield time as well. Are you tempted at all on Mundy?
You'd want to think that he would end up spending more time in the midfield in order to boost his average, which I don't really see happening. So, look, I don't think that he's a bad pick. I think that there's some upside there. He's a gun footballer. I just think that there's better selections out there.
I agree. He's 32, so off that basis, it's hard to pick him. Jeremy Cameron averaged 89 last year, 490,000. You know, a couple years ago, all Australian at a really young age, we're all talking about him sort of being that next Lance Franklin and averaging premium numbers. Hasn't quite realized that, but, you know, we're still talking about GWS being a top four contender. Cameron can still improve. I mean, I know lots of people are looking at Danaher, who we'll be talking about shortly. Surely Cameron's as attractive.
Yeah, look, I think that in 8 weeks' time, we'll be looking at potentially bringing Cameron into our teams because he's solidified himself as one of the best scoring premium key position players, particularly because he can get up the ground and run a bit more, and that's even more so now with Patton playing more regularly in the forward line. I think that that gives Cameron a little bit of freedom. Look, I think that he may turn out to be a really good pick. What's his upside? Can he average over 100? I think that's probably unlikely, but yeah, I think he's a pretty good selection at his price.
Next bloke, Mitch Wallace. Last year only played the 12 games, averaged 88, available in the forward line, but we've seen his high scoring potential in the midfield before. Would you consider him at all?
Yeah, I have considered him. I think that the reason why I'm not is because two factors. His durability, he's never played more than 19 games in a season, and he is, again, just another one of those Bulldogs players that can play midfield and forward, and because he probably has more skills as a forward than some of the others, I think that that'll mean that he spends some more time down there. But look, he is a player that it wouldn't surprise me if he averaged 110 1 year, and I think in a different team available as a forward, I'd definitely pick him. It's just that there, like you said, there's so many players of that type. Like, I mean, if Bontempelli, McRae and Libera are the starting midfielders, you've got a lot of other players that are thinking of getting a spot in there.
All right, next question here is from David Swizz. He's asking about Walters and Lambert. Michael Walters, 480K, averaged 87 last year. And Lambert, priced at 470, having averaged 86 last year.
Lambert may be one of the least sexy picks you could ever take in the forward line, but... just because he just doesn't seem to like he's just going to completely dominate. But the back half of last year, he really did get his numbers up and scored a lot more hundreds. He didn't score 100 until round 14 and then had 7 after that. So if he can back that up, and there's no signs really to say that his role is going to be changing from that role that he played late last year, he could definitely average 95. And I think he may surprise some of us with his output and turn out to be a pretty decent pick. So not someone that's been in consideration for me, but still could work out quite well. Walters is someone that I find really, really interesting as a pick. He seems like he may have a full-time or mainly a midfield role. And when he's done that last year, he really excelled with that and he's really boosted his scoring significantly. I guess that the risks with that is that they send a tag to him pretty quickly because he does seem taggable and because he's just so damaging in the midfield. I guess Neil and Fife may have a bit of a say in where that tag goes. But look, I think that he is a player with some really significant upside, especially over a short period of time. He's almost the sort of player that you pick and he dominates until round 8 or 9 and gets up to 600,000 and then you actually trade him out like we saw one of the winners do with Cloak a few years ago. I know that that's an extremely risky strategy to think about doing, but yeah, he is someone that I've considered but probably won't make my final team.
It's a very awkward price point. We got asked the question, why do we bother looking at the top 8 predictions when if you're a really good player, it really doesn't seem to make a huge difference. I think where it makes a huge difference is a player type like Walters, where if you're a bloke who's on the fringe that relies on your team a little bit more than being able to carry the team on your two shoulders yourself, you're going to be affected a bit more by the amount of opportunities you get and therefore the amount of Supercoach points that are potentially available to you. So I'd be more confident in Walters if Freo looked like a top 8 contender this year, but they still look like they're in a bit of a rebuild phase. So I'm a little bit less confident. And like you said, consistency is an issue. All right, next bloke, Jared Ruffhead, averaged 86.5 last year, available as a forward, has previously averaged 110 before, but that was a while ago now when Hawks were at the start of their three-peat run and Ruffhead was playing a little bit more in the rucks as a backup cover. Since McAvoy's come through, Ruffhead doesn't seem to have had the same amount of scoring ceiling. Even since Buddy has left, maybe he's had to stay at home in the forward line a little bit more. This year, we're looking a little bit further in terms of options. Have you considered him at all?
I think that I would be more likely to pick Gunston than Ruffhead, just given the stages of their careers.
Yeah, I'd take Cameron over Ruffhead too if you're looking at a key position. We've got another key position to discuss though, and that's Joey Danaher. I know you put him on the list actually because he's floated in and out of your team. Averaged 86 last year, priced at 472,000.
He's played 22 games 3 years in a row. He has that lower floor because he gets to play in the ruck as a second ruck pretty much every week. So an example of that is last year his lowest score, he did have a 40 in round 3. That was a horrible, horrible rainy day against Carlton. But other than that, like he had a 58. He did, compared to the other key forwards, he probably doesn't have that extreme low. And we haven't really seen the 150 games from him yet. And I think that they're coming. He's just going to completely tear again. Game apart at some point, and he plays really well in the big games. He's super athletic. He gets up the ground. I guess that there's a bit of a cap on his ceiling. I think that he probably maybe comes up to 98 this year if he has a really super, super good year. He only averaged 86 from kicking 60-plus goals this year. The Bombers do have a tough draw, but, I mean, a lot of people can think that they might improve. I think there's a lot of reasons to pick him. I wish I could fit him in. I'm not sure. He's a very risky selection, and at his price, you need him to be a top 6 premium. So I'm not sure that I quite have the guts to pick him, but I can understand why people are.
To be honest, I added him to the run sheet on your request. He hadn't even come across
my thoughts.
Because
you're a one-eyed Geelong supporter, throughout the preseason.
I'm very averse to the key position forwards, and I would have Cameron and I would have Franklin ahead of, and even Kennedy as three key positions that I'd pick ahead of Joey. Yeah, he's not cheap enough to present a heap of value. So like Mark said, you'd need him to be in the top 6 averaging forwards. And so just his profile meant that I didn't really even consider him. On to Travis Boak. Averaged 85 last year, mid-forward. He's only 29, 468,000. Last year was injury affected, didn't have the best preseason. But having said that, he also moved out of that midfield role. You'd think Rockliffe's inclusion wouldn't help that. Chad Wingard, if he stays in the midfield, won't help that. There are concerns over Boak as a pick, but you know, there's certainly the potential for him. If his midfield split goes up by, you know, another 10%, his form goes back by another 10%, that he could sit with a 95-plus average. And if he goes from 85 85 to averaging 95 and being close to the top six averaging forwards, that'd be a win.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to add to that. I think that, like you say, if you're confident on him, I think that he could really work out to be a really good pick. He's young enough. His numbers didn't go down by that much last year. He has the potential in him to put in some really big games. The attention won't be on him this year. So, yeah, if you know a bit about Port and you think that their draw is good enough, not someone that's in my side at the moment, but I haven't completely ruled him out yet.
Another key position forward that I'd bring in ahead of Joey Danaher, Tom Lynch, averaged 85 last year. In patches, he was in the top six averaging forwards, but he had quite a few down games as Gold Coast struggled a little bit and therefore struggled to get across the line. You know, the commentators calling him the $1.5 million man after this year.
He's not coming to Geelong, mate. Don't talk him up. You're not pinching another one off the top of the market. I don't disagree with a lot of that. Just struggled in a few games last year, like really struggles. Charlie Dixon's gone, so that's not as obvious who the extra forward has been because Peter Wright's been quite young still. So, look, I think he's got the potential to get up there to the 9,500 average. A lot of concerns around playing for Gold Coast, though. I guess that being that contract year can go either way. Danger, Dusty, Kelly, the cream of the crop all had insanely good years in their contract year. Wouldn't totally surprise me if Lynch did the same. Too risky a pick for mine.
He just needs a sniff. Literally every sniff he makes the most out of, and I'd actually pick him ahead of Cameron and Danaher. Alright, next question's from Lincoln Bergs. He's asking about Tom Papley. Have you considered Papley at all?
Apparently he's going to get more midfield time. He kicked 3 on the weekend, I think, against the Lions, so I had a really good game. Not someone that I would be considering. Look, I think the risks are just so high on a third-year player that hasn't played 22 games before compared to some of the other players that we're talking about. So not getting a big enough discount to be taking a risk like that.
All right, next bloke, he's, I reckon, actually the guy that I'm most likely to pick from an Essendon point of view. That's Devon Smith, 439,000, average 80 last year playing for GWS, but didn't get as much midfield time as he'd like. He looks like he'll get more midfield time this year. Had a great JLT. I actually had Stringer ahead of Smith before that point.
He is one of the players that I've got absolutely locked in my team and have had since the first day of preseason. I think that his upside is sort of 95. Is it a good price? He is going to have a role change, new team. There's a lot of reasons to think that he will see an uptick in his scoring. I guess that the main reason not to pick him would be the knee trouble that he's had over the last couple of years, which has restricted the amount of games that he's played. He has averaged over 90 before. Probably like him to be a little bit cheaper to be an absolute lock, but he's someone that will definitely be lining up around one for me as long as he gets through the next couple of weeks.
If he goes from 80 to 90, is that in itself good enough as a starting selection considering he starts at 440,000? That part I'm not so sure. I think you'd love for him to go to an average of 95 and then he'd be an absolute bona fide. And if I saw that being quite a realistic chance, then he'd be locked in my team. But at this stage, I'm still have a few question marks around that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move to the next question here. This one's from Bradley Cook about Christian Petrarca. He averaged 79 last year, priced at 433,000. In terms of Champion Data's team of the year, he actually made it after last year. So for his position, they consider him almost best in class, even though that didn't quite convert into premium scoring. Former number one draft pick, I mean, still has upside to go. Melbourne would be one team that would consider themselves unlucky last year not to make the eight, and you'd think would be a fair chance to making the eight this year. Have you considered Petrarca at all, Mark?
Yeah, look, he's in strong consideration, actually. Probably 50% chance of making my starting team. I think that my concerns are around Melbourne have a lot of other midfielders, and how much midfield time is he actually going to get at this stage in his career, and he'd probably need a bit to make that real jump into premium numbers, and a little bit worried. He's exactly the sort of player that I like to pick, like his age bracket, his profile, his preseason. Like there's a lot of reasons why he's the sort of guy that I like to pick. I'm not sure that he's...
You have Devon Smith in that spot.
I'm not sure that he's got that really, really high upside this season that I'd really want to lock him into my team. So decent chance I think you get stuck with a 85 to 90 averaging player, which is not the worst thing, but it's not a huge success either. So yeah, he's on the edge of my team.
I think you're always nervous about blokes that you rely on a good midfield split in order to make it into that premium level of scoring. And Petrarca, as you've alluded to, definitely falls within that camp. Whereas Smith, you kind of know they're going to expose him to the midfield a bit more. So the question is more around his ability to then convert on that opportunity. Whereas with Petrarca, it's more, he's already great, but will he get the role that he needs to be able to be a premium level scorer. And that will change across 22 rounds. Like, even if you can call it for the start of the season, there's no guarantee that the coach will continue playing him in that position for 22 rounds, because what they might need to make the finals will potentially change. You know, sometimes how good you are can be a curse. And that's the case for Toby Green in terms of being an absolute dominant small forward or medium forward. And Petrarca might potentially fall into that camp as well. So a consideration for mine, but hasn't made my team so far. I would have him almost as a coin flip against Devin Smith at this stage. Next question here is from Shannon Swan. Interested in your thoughts on Stringer and Christensen, both fallen in price with potential upside. I think Christensen's basically a complete lock for the both of us.
Averages over 95 before. He is very, very easy picked at his price.
I think we also talked about trying to start as many mid-prices if it were possible in the forward line this year. Like, you'd like to stay more flexible. And at this stage, he's the only guy that we've really been able to identify as more reliable. So based on the fact that there's not much competition for that price point and his previous scoring potential, having averaged 95 in Supercoach before, doesn't need much additional commentary. As long as he rocks up round one, he just needs a few 90s to really go up in price. Stringer's the more interesting one.
I think that he's probably not discounted enough because I don't see him ending up with premium numbers. And if you're paying Bundy price, like under 300,000, you can sometimes get away with a player getting just really good numbers, like 80 plus, but not premium numbers, and then upgrading them later. But at Stringer's price, you need him to actually become a premium. And I don't see that happening this year.
Agree that, Mark. All right, we'll move on to the next question here from Muhammad Afzal, asking about two Bulldogs forwards, Crozier and Dunkley. Would they make a mid-price madness team, or are you considering them at all?
No, not considering them, to be honest. It was interesting. I saw Dunkley given the number 5. He has had some pretty good scores in the past. They're sort of around like 290 for Dunkley, 340 for Crozier. I still think that you need 85 averages, which, I mean, they could pull out, but I wouldn't say that they're better than a 50% chance of pulling those averages out.
And that's why Christensen, in comparison, just looks like a lock. When you look at the other options around that mark, there's a chance that they might meander around the 75, 80 mark and not deliver enough value for you to bank. That wraps up the four-line show, Mark. I think I actually ended up coming out of that with a few more considerations than I went into the show with. Did that change your team at all? Are you still as locked as you were highlighting
It's
the
kind
start
of annoying
of the show,
talking
Mark?
To you because I've become less locked, but I think that based on the tone of the questions that we were getting from our listeners, they were worried that there weren't enough selections up forward. But I think that there was quite a lot of players that we talked about in today's show that we were not against picking at worst and in favor of a lot that aren't even in our own teams.
It's just about who you want to take the risk with. And I think that's why we tackled the forwards show first, because even though there's some doubt over the options that we have, being able to step up to premium status, at least we have those options. Whereas when we get to the back line next week, Mark, yeah, it's going to be a real struggle. All right, that wraps up this week's show, Mark. Just going to mention, again, the Supercoach Coach League's open league codes available on Facebook and on supercoachcoach.com.au. Ranked league registrations will close, so please get on top of that if you want to join our ranked leagues. They tend to be the ones that have the best shot at ending up in the top 20 leagues for the year. Our Supercoach Coach group and patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to support the show. We very, very much appreciate all the love that we've been receiving via that platform, especially in the last couple of weeks since we've kickstarted the preseason episodes. Mark, anything to wrap up the forward line show with? Final thoughts on the Supercoach forwards for 2018?
Let's bring on lockout, because I don't want to have to make too many of these calls again. And I think that just remember, we're playing a game where you have to gamble a little bit.
And this year more than most, I think. So the same tune that we're singing at the end of the midfield show last week, it's the same tune we're singing again this week. And I have a feeling it'll be the same tune next week. What that totals up to is having to take a lot of risk across the different lines in terms of picking breakouts or picking value targets or balancing injury risk versus scoring potential. So probably say that if you're taking lots of risks across every single one of your lines, that you maybe try and mitigate that. You want to look at your risk profile across your whole team and not just position by position. So you don't want to take two risky picks per position because you end up with six risky picks. So make sure you balance your risk across your whole team would be my recommendation to close out the show. All right. Having said that, we'll see you next week for the Backline Show. Thanks, Mark.
See ya.